Good morning. It's 11 minutes before the hour. You're listening to NPR's Morning Edition over Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitkim, where it's 15 degrees under fair skies. Today's Thursday, January 19th, 2012. I'm Robert Woolsey with Raven News. A reality television show filmed during Sitka's herring fishery has been pulled off the air. The TLC network first aired Hook, Line, and Sisters on December 29th. The show follows the Anderson family as they participate in Alaska fisheries aboard their vessel, the Memory Ann. Much of it was filmed during last year's Sitka Sound Sacro herring fishery. Sierra Anderson, one of the sisters mentioned in the title, said she could not give an interview about why the show was canceled and that the future of the show is still uncertain. But on her public blog, she says she got a phone call on January 6th telling her TLC had pulled the plug on the show. The cable network had originally planned to air 7 episodes of the program. Anderson wrote on her blog, quote, "I know that what I had was a great show, and I don't take any of it personally. I still have hope that something good comes of this." TLC is one of several channels owned by Maryland-based Discovery Communications. A pair of recent Sitka High graduates had an unexpected meeting last week in a combat hospital in Kandahar, Afghanistan. J.R.N. Chetta is studying photojournalism at the University of Alaska Fairbanks, where he's been working on an extended project with the 125th Stryker Brigade. And Chetta was invited to visit the brigade in Afghanistan last December to cover its activities, everything from an air assault to the holidays overseas to outreach with the civilian population. As part of his work, Anchetta also visited a combat hospital that has become famous for saving soldiers' lives. While Anchetta was braced for the possibility that he might see some of his new friends from the brigade in that hospital, he never imagined finding a wounded classmate from Sitka, Joe Mill. "Every one of us has small world moments when we meet an acquaintance or a friend of a friend in a faraway place." J.R. Anchetta graduated from Sitka High in 2006. If he had known it was Joe Mill, class of 2009, lying behind the curtain in the intensive care area of the Roll 3 International Medical Unit, he may have had second thoughts about going in. He was already having second thoughts.
Would it be somebody I know from the brigade that we've been following? And if I do know this person or these two people, how will I carry myself, or how can I prepare myself to deal with that situation?
His instructor at UAF and colleague in this documentary project, Cheryl Hatch, had already gone inside to get the soldiers' permission to visit. There was nothing to stop Anchetta but his own fears.
Took a deep breath and prayed, and I decided to join Cheryl because I was kind of getting nervous, and the more time I waited, the more uneasy I felt. So I set my cameras down and went inside and introduced myself to PFC Rex Tharp next to Cheryl, and they were both talking, and I told him I was from Sitka, Alaska, and he said, "Oh yeah, my buddy next to me is from Alaska." And so I turned and I recognized Joe, and he recognized me, and after that, you know, I went next to him and talked to him.
Joe Mill and Tharp are not in Fort Richardson's Stryker Brigade. They are from Fort Drum, New York. Although Mill was 3 years behind Anchetta in school, the pair knew each other from church in Sitka. Mill's father was stationed in Sitka with the U.S. Coast Guard at the time. Both soldiers had lost their right legs below the knee to Taliban bombs called IEDs, or improvised explosive devices. Mill told Anchetta how it happened.
The two soldiers were on a mission, on a patrol, so PFC Rex Tharp was first injured in a blast in Kandahar, and he first hit the IED, and Specialist Joe Mill, you know, heard the blast and went running to get him, to aid him, and which set off another IED, which they were saying it appeared to be a command wire IED.
A command wire IED is a secondary weapon designed to inflict further damage in an attack, often on those there to render aid. Along with traumatic head injuries, the loss of limbs has become a defining characteristic of wounds suffered in America's wars in the Mideast. Anchieta says his former classmate seemed undeterred.
And he was very concerned about his career in the military because of his leg. And he was constantly asking them, the nurses, you know, I don't care if I push buttons, I want to stay in the Army.
But Anchieta says that Mill was also thoughtful about his situation. He asked Anchieta to get in touch with his girlfriend, Hillary Martin, who still lives in Sitka. He also wanted those of us back here to know that the decision to serve should not be taken lightly.
What Joe told me was, I am 20 years old. I could have gone to college, but I wanted to serve in the Army. And I'm not sure how explicit I could be, but he said, when you go back home, tell people that this stuff is real.
Joe Mill and PFC Tharp were expected to be transferred to a military hospital in Germany. J.R. Anchieta is returning to Alaska for the spring semester at UAF, where he'll also serve an internship at the Fairbanks Daily News Miner. His month-long study in Afghanistan may have delivered a bigger lesson than he bargained for. This stuff and the people who serve are very real.
I think the most touching thing that I've seen here is, you know, the sacrifice that the soldiers give. And I've met a lot of, you know, down-to-earth, awesome young men. And the most amazing thing is just, you know, talking to them.
Thanks to Jeff Seifert for his help with that story. To see some of J.R. Anchieta's photographs from Afghanistan, follow the link posted with this story at our website, kcaw.org. The group behind a citizens' initiative to reestablish an Alaska coastal management program spent more than $100,000 on its nearly month-long signature-gathering effort. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
Juneau Mayor Bruce Botello is chairman of the Alaska Sea Party and a primary sponsor of the initiative.
Well, we still have some bills coming in. Rough estimate is $100,000 to $105,000.
From the time it was founded in October to the end of December, the Sea Party reported more than $67,000 in income to the Alaska Public Offices Commission. It spent more than $59,000. Revenue and expenditures for this month are not yet available. The North Slope Borough gave the Sea Party campaign $25,000. Other major donors included the Bristol Bay Borough, the Bristol Bay Native Association, the cities of Valdez and Alaknagik, two community development quota groups, the Western Alaska Community Development Association and the Alaska Pribilof Island Community Development Association, as well as the Alaska Municipal League and the Alaska Conference of Mayors. The Sea Party's APOC filing shows the group paid Anchorage consultant Scott Kohlhaas $50,000, by far the group's largest expenditure. Botello says Kohlhaas, a 2010 candidate for State House as a Libertarian, organized the petition drive in Anchorage, Fairbanks, and the Mat-Su, which included using paid signature gatherers. He also provided verification services. Elsewhere in the state, the Sea Party used about 250 volunteers. The group delivered 34,000 signatures to the Division of Elections on Tuesday. By turning them in before the legislature convened, the group achieved its goal of giving lawmakers an opportunity to pass substantially similar legislation during the 90-day session. Botello admits part of that is a desire to avoid a costly campaign to get voters to approve the initiative.
We've been told that we should expect to be looking at a campaign of about $500,000. And of course, that doesn't take into account the extent to which there might be an organized opposition.
Lawmakers on Tuesday gave no assurances that they would consider a coastal management bill this session. The federally funded program, which helped industry and communities navigate the complicated federal and state permitting process for coastal development, closed last year after the legislature and Parnell administration failed to work out a deal to reauthorize it. In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
The Senate Finance Committee has introduced legislation that would change Alaska's system of taxing oil and gas production together. It's the same bill the legislature passed 2 years ago and that the governor vetoed, saying it effectively raised taxes on oil and gas companies. Darwin Peterson, chief of staff for Senator Bert Stedman, says the bill was introduced to start the discussion. He says Stedman envisions any changes to Alaska's oil tax structure, including decoupling. During the 2010 debate, Stedman and others argued that under the current system, there's a risk of dilution effect on revenues when oil prices are high relative to gas. They said the drag could cost the state up to $2 billion a year or more in revenue once gas starts flowing through a major line. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski will host a discussion on the effect on Alaska of debris from last year's tsunami in Japan. The Alaska Republican says Alaskans need to hear what is being seen and what is being done about debris showing up on the Alaska coast from the March 11th event. The hour-long discussion is scheduled for 10:30 a.m. tomorrow at the University of Alaska Anchorage. Peter Murphy, the Alaska coordinator of the Marine Debris Program from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, will be a speaker. Kristen Ryan of the State Department of Environmental Conservation and Dave Gaudette of the Marine Conservation Alliance Foundation will also be a part of the roundtable, and the discussion is also scheduled to be webcast. So in weather forecast today for Sitka and PA, calls for sunshine, highs around 23, east winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. Tonight, increasing clouds, lows 14 to 20. Tomorrow, cloudy with a chance of snow, highs around 30. Northeast winds 15 to 25 miles per hour. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka. Thanks for joining me. Have a good morning.